Attention all outdoor adventurers. The wilderness is calling. Wilderness Rider Ranch, that is.
In the rolling mountains of northern Arkansas, the sun lights fire in the sky every morning as the forest wakes up for an adventurous day at the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park.
Just a day's drive from all the hustle, bustle, and madness of the big city, the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch directly adjoins the Buffalo National River Park in the beautiful Boxley Valley Headwaters region, and it is bookended on the west side by the Sweden Creek Nature Preserve. It is some fantastic, one-of-a-kind natural property.
From hiking and mountain biking, climbing, or even off-road exploration on your dirt bike, your dual sport, ATV, side-by-side, or Jeep. Whether you camp by pristine waterfalls and unique natural wonders or enjoy more civilized lodging, your experience while exploring the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park will create memories which last a lifetime. Start your magical vacation at wildernessrider.com.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
No matter what you ride or drive, it's all about taking it outside.
So get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride.
This is Outdoors with Wheels with Lynn and Donnie.
Get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride.
For best results, mix thoroughly with dirt, add adrenaline, then shake really well. And now, Outdoors with Wheels. Here's Lynn and Donnie.
Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Donnie Stewart.
And I'm Lynn Beckwith.
Well, it's a little soggy, but it looks like spring is finally starting to spring around here.
It's been a really unique winter. I think all over the country we've had some very excessive freezing in some areas and then some surprisingly warm wintertime weather for the most part all across the South and reaching up a little further north than it does some years.
Yeah, even up in northwest Arkansas, we have seen, truthfully, very little winter. Unfortunately, a bit of the winter we did see was during the Mardi Gras weekend, but by and large, this is very unusual to see so many nice, pleasant days in the middle of what should be our coldest time.
Well, that sure makes for some good riding, hiking, climbing, whatever you do that takes you outside. And if you haven't figured that out, if you've listened to any of our previous episodes, you know that is what Donnie and I are all about, is we really want to see you get off the sofa, out of the house, away from the video games, and get some old-fashioned exercise outdoors.
That is right. In the last couple of weeks, we've been living it as well as preaching it, haven't we?
Well, I'm not sure it's just the last couple of weeks. It's something we certainly try to do all the time. And of course, most of the time, we're doing that on two wheels.
Well, last weekend was certainly a banner weekend for two-wheeled activities. There was a cornucopia of different off-road events to participate in, depending on what flavor of motorized vehicle you use.
You know, one of the things I'd like to discuss a little bit more on the show is mountain biking, and I'm looking forward to having some mountain biking experts and enthusiasts on the show in some future episodes. I've done a lot of road biking. I've done a lot of bicycling in my life, but only a very limited amount of trail riding in the forest. You, on the other hand, were a pretty accomplished mountain biker and BMXer as a youngster.
Well, I certainly spent an awful lot of my young years on a bicycle. However, given away my age, it was before we had mountain bikes and actually a few years before even BMX got invented around Houston area.
So what were you riding?
I was riding a personal built contraption that consisted of a mid-50s Columbia bike frame that we had altered so that we could run a 20-inch paperboy rear wheel and a 26-inch paperboy front wheel. And we called it the Diesel.
I wish I could have seen that hybrid. It sounds like it was basically a Stingray, but built up on wheels similar to what a newspaper delivery boy would use?
Yeah, you kind of got it. It looked like a Stingray in the back half and a paperboy bike in the front half. But of course, we stripped everything off of it, including the seat and the little seat post. So it was a nice, clean, radius frame. Needless to say, there was never any sitting on that bike, but it was great for dirt riding.
I know many times you have told me that that was the testing ground for a lot of your motorbike skills now, that part of your skill level today stems from all of your bicycling in your youth.
Yeah, that was definitely the riding foundation that I built on, for sure. We spent an awful lot of hours out at the reservoirs and the sand lots, racing anyone else who would show up on a pedal two-wheel contraption and wishing that we could afford a motorized two-wheel contraption.
If you're a mountain bike enthusiast, please shoot us an email. It's info@outdoorswithwheels.com.
And if you're a hardcore mountain biker, you might want to come up to the Wilderness Rider Ranch.
Several months ago, I saw a couple of women mountain bikers just on the mountain roads, not necessarily on the ranch trails. And I was so impressed because every bit of terrain in this area would be challenging on a bicycle.
It certainly is. When I was in my young 30s, I did a little bit of mountain biking around here, but I got to say those hills pretty much whooped this old boy from Houston into submission. I got me a motor.
There was quite a motorized event this last weekend in Lubbock, Texas, all part of the Texas State Championship Enduro Circuit, the TSCEC.
Well, that's a mouthful, isn't it? That's why most people just call them TSEC.
Well, this one was a little special, I believe, because there were several organizations involved.
Yeah, the 2017 Lone Star Enduro was really quite a meetup. The Lubbock Trail Riders Association put on the event, and it was sanctioned by TSEC, the Blackjack Enduro Championship Series, and the Rocky Mountain Enduro Circuit. So you had three different racing series converging on Calgary, Texas for the weekend.
Well, I sure wish we could have gone to that. I bet it was a huge event.
Yeah, I'm still a little disappointed we didn't show up out there. That was my original intention, was to go out there, and the YZ served me up a few surprise missing parts just before time to load up and go. So by the time we got parts in, we had missed the event.
Well, those missing parts, I happen to know, got rattled off the bike on the rocks and the kind of difficult terrain here at the Wilderness Rider Ranch.
Yeah, you had to go and tell on me. I fooled around and let some parts get away from me. I got so caught up with the riding, I think I forgot to do the daily maintenance and some parts kind of fell off the bike.
It was only an axle bolt. I don't know why you were worried about it.
Well, if it just would have been in the front, I guess I could have rode a wheelie.
Yes, undoubtedly you could have.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the Torn Series also kicked off this weekend. So there was plenty of off-road racing going on in Texas.
As we talk about these spring events, I hate to talk about the ones that just happened because there are so many more coming up. Be sure to head to Google, head to your favorite race organization, head to outdoorswithwheels.com, and we'll have links on all sorts of springtime activities.
Well, we are making our way up to the Wilderness Rider Ranch today, and we're driving north on Highway 59, and I passed a girl riding a bicycle, I thought. But then I noticed she was rolling about 40 miles an hour and she wasn't even pedaling. As we cruised by, I stopped and met her. Tell me about this contraption you're riding.
Well, I actually bought a cruiser bike with the fat tires up at Walmart for only $100. And then I ordered the motor kit for $100 on eBay. And me and my son put it together ourselves. And it does run about 40 miles an hour, a little bit faster going downhill. Don't tell anybody. Wait, I think they probably already know. It gets around like you would not believe. It's great. We live in a college town here, and so it's even better, kind of want to put the word out for college kids, because it is something that's really great to ride. And not only that, it's a lot of fun. I feel like a rockin' mom. You know, my kids think I'm awesome. And I had a lot of fun putting it together with my son. And obviously, it's gotten a lot of attention. It has a 40cc motor on it, so it's still legal, and I'm not breaking any laws. Pedal, push, start, and it rides like a motorcycle. Pretty fabulous.
Well, it looks just awesome. It reminds me of like a 1908 Harley or something.
It feels like one. It really does. It feels like one. I feel that way. It makes me want to get one.
Every ride you take is an adventure on it, isn't it?
It is. There are some maintenance things that you have to take care of on it. It's always maintenance, but just like with any vehicle, I mean, pretty much. I have just recently got it going to where everything's smooth, and I am out on the highway now, as you met me, and it was fabulous. I can't wait to get back on the road.
So we're seeing it in one of its early voyages, huh?
Yes, yes. I've only taken it on a couple of trips before this, so this is kind of like the big long haul, actually. This is the longest ride that I went on. It's been fabulous.
You know, the thing has a little tiny teardrop gas tank, just like a motorcycle. How much gas fits in that?
It only fits a gallon of gas, and it gets 200 miles to the gallon.
Incredible. 40 miles an hour, 200 miles to the gallon. And tell me the best part, motorcycle license required?
Nope.
Awesome.
And I look hot riding it.
You do. You look real good. You guys will have to go to the website and see a picture of Randy mounted up on her bike.
Oh my gosh.
She is looking cool.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for taking a minute and telling us about this. And it sounds like something just any old body could do in just a weekend or two, huh?
They can. Thank God for Google.
Was it much of a challenge putting the thing together?
It was. If it wasn't for my son, who is a complete genius. He's only 13, and he is a complete genius. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
The thing looks super cool. And obviously, you're discovering the bliss of being out on two wheels at a fraction of the cost of even an old beater motorcycle.
I love it. I really do. I love it. You can't beat that. I mean, you really can't. As much as gas goes up and down, you just cannot beat that. I love it.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad I stopped and visited with you, and I hope some of you younger folks out there who need some very economical transportation were listening.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Happy riding.
Thank you.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
The trail is calling. Every turn, hill and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer 1005, Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a 3-seater to a 5-seater in seconds. So, no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
We are screaming through the valley where the Nishnabotna flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
We're out at the Wilderness Rider Ranch. We just finished taking a scenic lap around the place. We had a group of 19 side-by-sides and just a couple of us brave souls on motorcycles. It was me and Devin Young were the only two that got out there on the bikes. What'd you think? It was a little slick, I thought.
Yeah, I just got the bike yesterday. The place is awesome. It's beautiful. And it was fun just to go outside and, you know, ride around and enjoy the great outdoors.
Now, Devin, how long have you been riding on two wheels?
Oh, not very long, off and on. I mainly race four-wheelers, but I just purchased one just here recently, yesterday actually, and decided I wanted to gain some skill on two wheels and just try it out.
Well, you certainly tried it out here at the Wilderness Rider Ranch. I have tried to ride some of the trails, and there's some of the easier ones I'm okay on, but to go from four wheels to two wheels into this type of terrain was very brave.
Yeah, it's definitely a transition. I mean, it's mainly just trying to figure out the clutch and your balance, and after that, it kind of comes to you. It's definitely different.
Well, how do you think your four-wheeler experience, because you've actually been a pro at four-wheel racing, tell us a little bit about that and how it might have affected your ability to pick up two wheels so fast.
Well, I've been ATV racing for a while now, and we raced the M WEDT, which is Midwest Nationals, and it's a great time, great people. I'm competing for the Pro and Pro-Am class this year. I'm really excited about that. Hopefully, we got good. I got a mechanic behind us this year, Yamaha Harrison Safe Flight, Wrath, Moto Wad Suspension. I'm really excited to try that out, and I hope it goes good for us. And, you know, riding ATVs, it helps you out. It makes you a better skill level in every way. I mean, you're healthier and just riding overall. Going to a bike wasn't that much of a difference to me. It's just mainly just figuring it out, your balance. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty much basically the same thing.
What class ATV do you race?
I race the 450 class. They have C, B, A, Pro Light, Pro Am, and Pro, and I race Pro and Pro Am.
So you're at the top of the pile, huh?
Yeah, it took a while to get there, but we're finally there and competing with the big boys.
Good deal. How's the season going for you?
We're starting in April. April 25th is the first race in Belleville, Illinois, and there's 12 rounds.
And that'll take you through till when?
I think in November sometime, November 25th, I think, is the last race. I'm really excited. Like I said, we got a great backup behind us this year, and I just couldn't be more thrilled.
Well, we sure wish you luck. When will you be around this area so we can go watch you ride?
We come to Flippin, Arkansas this year. It's in July, and it's an awesome track. Great people. I'm excited to ride there. It's kind of my home track. We used to go back when they had it open all the time, and I love that track, and I'm excited to be there and race for my hometown.
Yeah, give the out-of-staters a schooling.
Gonna try.
Now, you commented that you've been racing for quite a while, but you're still a very young man. When did you start racing and riding four-wheelers?
Oh, I started racing and rodeoing about 3.5, and racing four-wheelers, I probably started about 8 or 9, really competitively. It started competitively when I got to 90cc, and then it went on from there, and I've been hooked on it ever since.
And how old are you now, Devin?
I am 18.
Well, I knew you were a young man, and it's really very impressive. I wish that our listeners had all already seen the terrain out here in Arkansas to truly appreciate why I'm in such awe of you going from four wheels to two wheels and riding this place on your second day on the bike.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like I said, this place is beautiful. There's rough trails and then there's wide open trails, and it's so beautiful out here. I love the Arkansas hills, and it's a great place to ride.
Yeah, those arcs really will make you a better rider quick.
For sure.
Now, if our listeners want to follow you as you continue with your Pro and Pro-Am racing this season, what would be the best way to do it? What is the name of the series?
MWEDT. It's by Lucas Oil. Best way to follow is on Facebook. Like I said, the closest we come is Arkansas, is in Flippin. Other than that, it's in Illinois, and we go to Minnesota and South Dakota and stuff like that. So we're all over the Midwest, and I'm really excited.
Well, you should be. Racing a national caliber event is pretty prestigious.
Yep. It took a while to get there, but once you get there, it's a lot of fun.
Now, you mentioned all of the nice people in the series, and I see that you have the support of your family, and it really is one of the most remarkable things about whether it's motocross or ATV racing or any type of sport that involves motorsports is the people that you run into.
Yeah, when you're at the track, it's kind of like a big family, and got a lot of people support. There are about 4 other supporters, and they just go around and help people that need it, and Yamaha of Harrison is my big supporter. Safe Light Auto Glass is another one, and they help us out tremendously. I go to Yamaha if I need parts, or they rebuild my motors and stuff like that. They really are a family-owned business, and it's awesome. You walk in, and they'll appreciate you just like they're your best friend, you know, and no matter who it is. I really appreciate them.
Yeah, they take good care of anybody that comes through the door, for sure. And we want to thank them for sending all you guys out here today. They kind of gave everybody the word that the place was open.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out here. I think 19 side-by-sides and us two on dirt bikes. And yeah, I think everybody enjoyed it. I mean, like I said, it's beautiful. And what was there like? There's probably 16 out of 19 YXZs, and they're all from Yamaha Harrison. So Eli's making good money at all of us.
Well, I think he'll be selling some new plastic to one of those YXZs.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel bad for David. He was going good, but, you know, everybody has those mess-ups.
So what got David? I wasn't out on the trails. Was it a water crossing or a rock?
No, I think he just, yeah, was sliding around, just having fun, and got a little crooked and slammed on the brakes a little too early and flipped it. But, you know, he's just figuring it out. I think this is his second ride, so at least he got it over with early.
He just wanted to put some character marks on that YXE, I think.
Well, we will certainly post some links so that everybody can learn a little bit more about the Midwest racing that you're going to be doing. And of course, as always, we encourage all of our listeners to get outside. If you have a youngster in the house, it doesn't matter if they're 3 years old or 18 years old or 25 years old, they are going to grow up in such a fantastic environment when they're out doing the various motorsports events.
And you could be a 60-year-old youngster like me and still get out there. Hey, don't we have some new gear to review?
We do, and it is a spinoff on a product that you and I are both already very familiar with. You have the double take mirrors, the enduro style, on a couple of your bikes already.
Yes, I do. I'm a big believer in the double take mirror system. I've used them for a number of years now, and they work very, very well. We've already done a quick review of the double take enduro mirrors on a previous episode.
Double take mirrors are aftermarket mirrors that you can add to most any vehicle, and they're particularly nice because they're quite durable, they're plastic, they use the RAM mounting system, so it's an easy way for you to adjust the direction that they're aimed as well as readjust them if they take a hit in the woods.
Yeah, and that's really the big difference between those mirrors and most others is they are designed to take a hit in the woods or during a fall or loading your ice chest in your four-wheeler, whatever. The point being, they're designed to take an impact, move out of the way, and you can quickly reposition them to where you want them. Or, let's say you're on a dual sport bike and you turn off onto a trail. Now, you really don't need mirrors on a trail. They're simply in the way. The cool thing about the double take mirrors is they fold down to the center and now they're no longer in the way.
Well, that works when you're on a trailer too. And that way, if you're trailering your bike backwards or your ATV backwards, you don't get your mirrors full of bugs as it goes down the freeway. But I'm going to call an exception on you. There are times that you wish you had mirrors on a trail, and double take has an answer to that.
That is true. While the traditional mirror is a bit too cumbersome to be effective in a lot of trail situations, that doesn't negate the fact that it's awful handy to know who's behind you or what's behind you.
Well, Double Take has a brand new mirror, their Trail Series, that accomplishes just that.
Yeah, I love their whole thought process on this. They basically looked at the mirror and said, well, the lollipop on a stick is simply not going to hunt in an off-road going through the bush situation. So they came up with a nice little mirror concept of putting the mirror directly to the handlebar without the lollipop stick. Now, a lot of us have seen the bar-end type street mirrors, but obviously on a dirt bike, having a mirror on the end of your handlebar also won't hunt.
Even if somebody developed a mirror strong enough to stay on the ends of my handlebars, they'd be so full of mud and dirt from falling on the ground, it wouldn't do a bit of good.
Yeah, that's true for a bunch of us, unfortunately. I'm not immune to it at all myself. Let's just say my bike likes to stay well rested.
Well, the good news is, even if your bike does take a nap on you, the new Trail Series mirror from Double Take is designed to mount directly to a handlebar. So it's going to work really good on your four-wheeler. It's probably going to help you out at your deer lease. And it's going to work on your motorcycle. Now, I've noticed a few good things and a few bad things, but the concept is excellent. Initially, we mounted these on the little KTM Freeride with the intention that they would work for both dual sport and on the trail. They didn't stay on the Freeride too long because you were anxious to try them out on your YZ. And at first, the mounting process was not entirely successful. It's obvious how they're designed to work. They're very well contoured mirrors, and the mounting bracket itself is very well contoured to fit on the handlebars. To start with, these mirrors have to be the easiest mount of any motorcycle accessory that I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, these were dead simple, one single zip tie.
The mounts are contoured to fit against the handlebar, and of course you can move them and swivel them in a way that they're going to fit where you want them. But once they're on, they're really designed to be somewhat permanent in their position. And they do that by virtue of running that zip tie through some heat shrink. And that's where I had a little bit of trouble, at least on the KTM. It just wanted to slide too much. The heat shrink was not rubberized enough. But we're getting ready to head back to the woods and try this all over again on your YZ450.
Yeah, we made a little modification to the heat shrink and basically 86'd it in favor of some surgical tubing, which should render it much more slip-proof, and the mirrors should stay in place very well on this next outing.
Well, let's go ride.
Ooh, I sure do love hearing those words. Well, we just got back in from our little research ride, and you can bet our double-take mirrors took a double good thrashing out on the Wilderness Rider Ranch. While they were under our expert care, they were exposed to plenty of smacks and thwacks from limbs, along with numerous bumps and slams on the trail. I'm happy to report with the surgical tube upgrade on the zip tie, I did not experience any shift in the mirrors whatsoever.
What a fun ride in the forest. Now, you're used to riding a motorcycle that doesn't have mirrors. Was it difficult to make yourself look at mirrors when you're trail riding in the woods?
No, because I quite frequently am curious as to whether another rider is close behind me or whether I've stretched out some distance on them, especially in the woods where you kind of like to stay in groups. So I found it handy to be able to look in the mirror and see what was going on behind me. What I also found is that I had to be in the exact position I was in when we set the mirrors, because what we found is if you keep them loose enough that they'll move around and be adjustable on the fly, when you hit a hard bump, they tend to bounce out of adjustment. So you pretty much have to set the zip ties tight enough that the mirrors are stable and fixed.
Yeah, I ran into that also when I had them on the KTM. Now, what I had to do, and I think you did on the YZ, was position them so that I could see when I was standing up, because so much of the time on the trails, I find myself up on the pegs.
Yeah, that's true. And also, due to the fact that they mount inboard of your throttle grip and hand grip on the handlebar, they don't really extend out enough to get beyond your shoulder and arms. So when you're in the seated position, I found that without lifting my arm up to see under it, the viewpoint was pretty well canceled out. So I went ahead and set mine to where I could see when I was up on the pegs.
If you're just tooling around on the trail, normally seated, maybe wanting to see if your child is behind you, I think you're going to have a tough time without flapping your wings a lot so that you can see underneath them and around your jacket.
That's pretty much the bottom line to it. If you're going to use them while you're seated, you're going to end up having to lift your arm up to get a good view of who's behind you, which isn't that big a deal, truthfully.
Many riders are going to find themselves standing on the pegs in the neutral attack position. So it's really a great opportunity to see what's going on behind you at that point.
Yeah, like I say, it's a brilliant concept. I do wish they would have made the mirror surface about 3/8 of an inch larger. I found that the size of the mirror was a tiny bit small to have to focus on in a hurry and get detail out of. I feel like if we would have had maybe 3/8, no more than 1/2 inch more diameter, it would have been a tad easier to grab a quick look.
These mirrors fit so compactly behind your bark busters. They're very hidden away. So I think they could have been a little bigger and still not created an obstacle or an issue with hitting things in the woods.
Yeah, I tend to agree. They hide so well behind the girth of your handlebar that I'm just certain they could have gotten away with a tiny bit more diameter, and I believe it really would have helped.
Even though they're small, they're more convex than the average mirror. So that helps them out a whole lot. So would that mean that objects in the mirror are closer than they appear?
Better to be safe than sorry. Twist the throttle.
That's good. DoubleTake as a company has always been so responsive to riders' needs, and you can see it in the design of all their products. I'd be willing to bet there'll be a generation two in no time at all that'll fix a couple of these little issues.
Yes, I'm guessing you're right about that, and hopefully we might get to have a little input in that generation too. I've definitely got a thought or two after using the first pair. But you know, at the end of the day, I would say they made a pretty good first effort. It would have been nice to have slightly more diameter. And obviously, it's no big deal to swap out surgical tube in place of the heat shrink, which is currently provided.
I can see having a set of these on the free ride as a permanent fixture, and then just putting the enduro-style mirrors on when I'm riding on the highway.
Yes, and for my MX bike, the trail mirrors are unobtrusive enough that I would not hesitate to leave them on if I were going to go racing with it. In fact, it would be mighty handy to be able to see just how close I'm being followed.
Well, I can remember one race where it would have been handy for you to see who was following you, because initially you didn't realize it was somebody in your class.
Yeah, that's right. I gave away the lead once because I thought it was a rider from a different class. Then when he went by and I saw his number plate, I had to play a little catch up. You know, we didn't audition them on our mountain bike, but I guarantee these things would be just exactly perfect on one of those as well. They'd be a great fit on those handlebars.
And mountain bikes face some of the same challenges that dual sport motorcycle riders do, because they are on paved roads where there's traffic, as well as out in the middle of nowhere on trails where they need a durable product.
Yeah, and the cool thing about these mirrors is they are just practically weightless, so they would fit a mountain bike just fine. They're not going to add any bulk to your handlebar rig.
They're very versatile. You know, when I first saw them, when we first unwrapped them, took them out of the package, I looked at the zip ties and my reaction was, really? zip ties to install, but this product has been so well developed and it is indeed so simple that it's going to have a lot of applications, and mountain bikes are a great example.
Yeah, and it's so lightweight that zip ties are totally appropriate for mounting it.
And it was really nice to have an aftermarket product that you didn't have to read 4 pages of instructions that were barely in English anyway before you figured out how to put them all on your bike.
Amen to that.
Well, you can tell that our minds are always off-road because we're forgetting about how applicable these are going to be to all you road bikers out there as well. If you are getting ready to ride the MS-150 in April, this would be a great advantage. I did that ride a couple of years ago, and it would be nice to see what's going on around you.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. We just completely overlooked the road bike aspect, or any bicycle for that matter. These would be a great fit on them.
Something tells me when the time's appropriate, we're going to have a grandchild with these on their tricycle.
Motorized tricycle.
Well, head to outdoorswithwheels.com. We have photos of both of the bikes with the mirrors mounted. We have a few photos of the mounting process. It'll give you a good indication of how simple and easy these are to install on any set of handlebars.
And how sleek they are once you get them installed.
And once you take a look at the pictures, you're going to want to buy them. The mirror is only $25, and you can go to doubletakemirror.com.
The Great Outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Any mechanic, woodworker, or craftsman knows the right tools make the job a whole lot easier. And Honda's 4-Trax Rancher line of ATVs are premium tools for the jobs you need to do. Whether that's on the farm, the job site, hunting, fishing, exploring, or on the ranch, you can see the whole Rancher line at Cycle Shack North. It's easy for you to choose the right mix of Rancher features, just like reaching for that right tool. Every Rancher starts with the same proven Honda engine, the heart of any ATV. A 420cc liquid-cooled, single-cylinder design with fuel injection that's engineered for the kind of wide, low-revving power an ATV rider wants. And it offers something no other ATV can, Honda's legendary reliability and efficiency. After that, the mix and match of features is up to you. They have models with independent rear suspension for excellent handling and a superior ride. They also have swing arm models suited to riders who tow a lot. So head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out the new 2017 Honda 4-Track Rancher lineup. Shouldn't all life's choices be that easy? Honda recommends a Rancher for riders 16 years old and older, and recommends that all ATV riders take a training course.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
We are screaming through the valley where the nation of botany flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
2 wheels or 4, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
We were out at Sterling Ranch not very long ago, and we caught up with Ed Ponikvar, the president of the Sam Houston Trails Coalition.
The volunteer effort has been amazing out at the Sam Houston National Forest.
Yes, it really has. They finally got the place back open. I think they're still working on just a segment or two of a couple of trails, but by and large, they have got the entire place back open. The east side, the west side, Kelly's Pond is all back in operation now.
Well, we're talking about the multi-use trails at the Sam Houston National Forest, just a little bit north of the Houston area. So it's a very convenient place for all Houstonians to go and experience the outdoors, whether they want to do it with their children on a hike or mountain bikes, or if they're riding a motorized vehicle or even a horse.
Yeah, there are plenty of opportunities out there to get into some great recreation.
Well, the trails were in need of a lot of repair because of all the rain in the springtime, and the Park Service really doesn't have the budget to maintain them. So what this story is about about today is really how amazing everybody in Houston and surrounding areas are and how much volunteer time went into restoring these trails.
It was a true Herculean effort. Those trails were decimated by those record floods we had last spring. And to have them back open less than a year later with volunteer workers is pretty incredible. I don't think it's ever been done anywhere before in the entire U.S. National Forest Program. So kudos and congratulations should go out to the U.S. Forest Service personnel that helped us get this thing off the ground as well. It wasn't just Houston volunteers that made it happen. It was the Forest Service personnel in the Houston area being not only willing but very accommodating to the process and helped us along the way to really bring this into fruition.
I bet there was a lot of paperwork and a whole lot of permissions and a whole lot of training that was involved to get all the volunteers ready to do their work.
Certainly was, and there was a certain amount of sticking your neck on the chopping block involved on the Forest Service personnel end of it to allow this little experiment to go on, and they deserve to be commended for it. Namely, our warden in charge out there, Mr. Warren Oya. Houston doesn't know what a great friend they have in him. He has done an excellent job of helping the Trails Coalition along the way get it right and keep these trails open to the public.
It certainly wouldn't have happened without him. Did you know that in 1960 is when the trails were actually mandated to be managed for the best use of the public by the Multi-Use Sustained Yield Act? So it's been a lot of years and a whole lot of good people in the history at the Park Service that have kept these available for all of us to use.
Yeah, we're really fortunate to have had them for such a long time. There's guys that are older than me that can remember riding them as young fellers, and that is a long time ago.
Well, we sure were fortunate to talk to the man who knows the most about the Sam Houston trails these days, Mr. Ed Ponikvar.
When we spoke with Ed, I asked him just how many volunteers there were in 2016.
Oh, boy, it's difficult to say. I can't tell you how many volunteers for certain. But the last time I checked, it looked like we were approaching close to 7,000 hours of volunteers in this fiscal year, 2016.
And that has resulted in how much work being done?
Well, it's pretty amazing. You know, what we focused on with the East Multi-Use Trail System is we focused on getting the bridges back open. You see, we have a unique partnership with the Sam Houston National Forest. And I sat down with the Forest Service and said, what can volunteers do? Because there's a lot of things that volunteers can't do. And they said, you really need to start at your bridges and work out from your bridges. And so what we did was we checked what compliance would be required. We really went after it. And I'm really impressed with the motorized community. But then some other kind of neat things happened during the summer that I'll share. The very simple nature is we start at the bridges and work out from there. Last time I checked, I think we're approaching 30 bridges that we've been able to give a treatment to.
And you have outright replaced a number of those bridges, correct?
Through the partnership with the Forest Service, there is a process of submitting grants. You have to submit in funding for that, and you have a bridge that can replace a wooden bridge, and it'll be a fireproof fiberglass structure. When it's installed, it's a combination between the enterprise unit of the Forest Service and volunteers that come out. I'll have to say that this last year we did 3 brand new bridges on the Sam Houston, and the enterprise unit, the Forest Service, really appreciated the volunteers coming out. They voiced their opinion on that, and they just really saw the cooperation.
Well, I was lucky enough to get to take part in one of those bridge building crews. It was a great day out in the woods for anybody who hadn't done this before. You get to work with a bunch of dedicated people out in a wonderful environment, and you learn some things you didn't know.
Now, all of our listeners hear us preach about dirt bikes and getting out in the woods so frequently. One of the unique things about the coalition is that, well, it is indeed a coalition. It encompasses so much more than motorized vehicles. What makes up the coalition?
Great question. The coalition is comprised of equestrians, motorized, cyclists, hikers, neighboring property owners, and we have an at-large director too. If you don't fall into any of those categories, the coalition is open to all. We are the energy capital of the world. And so I have a board member that's from Britain. I have a board member that's from Trinidad, and we have our native Texans that are on the board, and you even have a token Yankee that's on the board as well. So there is just a lot of diversity. It's a challenge at times because you have to listen, you know, you have to really ask and receive perspective. But when you ask, you know, what makes up the coalition, I think probably one of the things that makes it special is that it is comprised of such diversity of thought and recreation. But there's one thing that unites all of them, and that is how it fills your spirit and just simply being in the forest. So being in the forest is important to all of the coalition. It is the vision of the National Forest System. The reason that it was comprised is because they discovered that individual clubs would be challenged in being able to maintain trail systems. The Forest Service really didn't want to have multiple clubs calling on them. They wanted everybody to be able to work together, come together, and unite around a sustainability plan. And that's really what makes the coalition, that's really where the rubber meets the road, if you will, is that everybody's coming together to focus on maintaining the trails.
And the trails are being maintained for all these multidisciplines. They are also being maintained for general public use. You don't have to be a member of any of the organizations that make up the coalition to come use the Sam Houston National Forest multi-use trails. You had mentioned visiting some of the other trail systems throughout the country and the unique perspective you found on volunteers.
Yeah, the unique perspective I found on volunteers, and thank you for mentioning, at the beginning of this year, I've started traveling around to look at other managed trail systems nationwide. And something I discovered is what I basically called a non-trail user volunteer. Some of the other trail systems on their volunteer day, they will have people from the community come out. In one situation, I saw 150 that came out, and I interviewed a lot of them and discovered that they had been coming out. It was multi-generational. Actually, mothers that had been bringing their children were nearly 20 years old, and they had been coming out their entire lives. And I asked them, you know, why do you continue to come when you don't even use the trail? And they simply said, we get to see the impact of our efforts. It makes us feel good when we do work on the trail. And they said, we would really be lost without it. It's something we look forward to every year. And so those are some of the things that I've been learning on some of my travels, is there's something that's bringing people out to the trails, and it's not always related about the conveyance of what you're using to go upon those trails.
So much of it is just the love of the forest. One of the stories that Ed shared had to do with some lady equestrian riders. He was particularly proud that these women were so committed to come out and work, not just visit, not just hike around the trails, not just say, oh, gee, that needs to be done, but to work in the forest.
Yeah, they not only wanted to work, they wanted to operate some of the Forest Service heavy machinery and get the work done. They were adamant when they spoke with Ed that they could do this.
So what we did was we engaged the Forest Service and said, what can these ladies do? And they said, through the coalition, you can go through a process. If they will follow the process, we'll provide the fuel, we'll provide the equipment. Heck, we'll even bring it out to them. And so on one particular day this last year, the equestrians filled out the workday planner. And as they stood there at about 9 o'clock in the morning, the Forest Service brought out a truck, a trailer, and zero turn mowers. And those ladies were able to follow the procedure and got checked off for being able to operate it and was able to go around and mow the entire 3-acre facility. There's been other elements of recreation that have been out there, hikers and motorized throughout the entire summer. They have been painting, weed eating, and fixed the gate. They fixed the picnic tables. There's 8 picnic tables there. It's really impressive to see now in the hunting season, you know, when hunting season opened at Kelly's Pond, when you would have gone out there, you have all these different diversities of recreation that are enjoying it, and they have seen the difference that the volunteers are making. And for that particular day, for the equestrians, what was really startling was is that they brought out their equipment and never had to use it. The Forest Service provided everything, and it was really awesome to see the equestrians, you know, really take the charge, if you will, and take the lead in making that happen.
So often when something involves any sort of government facility, things can really slow down. It's also very impressive the way the Forest Service has worked together with the coalition to bring this all together.
You know, it's really interesting how you mentioned that. From the outside looking in, a lot of times we think that it's bureaucratic. And using the example of the zero turn mowers, even, and I'm terrible with names a lot of times, but I remember one of my volunteers said, even after the fact, they said, but it's so bureaucratic and I would never take my own mower out there. And it's interesting how people, you know, they reflect on it, and I have to remind them and say, no, remember, it took you about 4 minutes to fill out the form and hit submit and it was approved and you had to do nothing. You just simply were able to walk out there into the forest and they delivered that over to you. Now, there was an approval process and you had to watch a training video and you had to be checked off and they had to see that you were going to operate it safely. But other than that, it was all provided for you. And that's really what the partnership is all about. It's about compliance. It's about remaining really steadfast in your commitment that you will operate the equipment and operate it as if though it was your own. And, you know, wonderful things will happen.
A lot of these organizations that volunteer, ones like the Old Dudes on Dirt Bikes, and I know there are organizations both in the equestrian front, the hiking front, virtually everyone that uses the trails has had groups out there volunteering in one form or fashion. And a lot of these people have full-time jobs. They have very few days off. So they are giving up their day off that they could be somewhere else riding. They could be somewhere else on their horse to bring these trails back up to snuff. And I think that says a whole lot about the community that the forest brings together.
I'm kind of startled at the qualifications that some of the volunteers have. It's been quite amazing. I have engineers that are mechanical engineers. I have chemical engineers. I was quite startled to discover a local pastor that has a very large congregation to be working amongst the volunteers on the trail on one particular day. And I mean, these are not just the motorized element. You know, you mentioned, you know, old dudes on dirt bikes and TRH. And I mean, before them, we had user forms like Ton and KTM Talk and Two-Wheel Texans. I mean, these are just, there's all different types of things that bring people together. These resumes are just extremely impressive to the Forest Service. And I'm quite proud of one young lady that was recently directed over to the Coalition. She has a degree in geology with a focus in sedimentation transport. And when you think about what we're really struggling with erosion in the forest, it was really heaven sent. And it was awesome to be able to have her as a hiker working with motorized and very rapidly using her skills and her knowledge to be able to help guide us in rerouting trail, because for years we've been saying we need to reroute trail, and she's really leading the charge and helping us. A lot of the volunteers have, I mean, all of them have more than full-time jobs. It's really amazing to be able to see them make that commitment and that priority sacrifice.
Volunteerism in America has had steadfast hold in so many different organizations. There are a lot of established organizations that many of our listeners belong to. You may have a teenager that's in a high school organization that needs some community service hours. You may be part of a church. You may indeed just have made a mistake and need to do some community service. Would coming out to the forest and volunteering qualify as a community service project?
Absolutely, it would qualify. The Forest Service already accommodates community service projects already. I've met with them. I've been dying for the opportunity to afford people that avenue, you know, to be able to come out to the forest. So I really look forward to that. In terms of that life skills, kind of a weighted word, I've had some parents recently that have said they really appreciated that their children, when they worked with the Forest Service or worked with the Coalition, I should say, they really appreciated that they came home understanding the good discipline that comes of it. You know, you got to be before you can do, and you got to do before you can have. And we try to instill some of those life skills in our volunteers as well, which may revolve around the repeat volunteer that is not actually using the trail, but actually comes out to the trail because of the camaraderie. I've heard again today, and I hear it constantly, I just like being in the forest. I'm out here because it's just great working with these diverse group of guys and gals. So one of the accomplishments that makes me most proud, and it's really a combination, so there's a lot of variables here, but the end result is that we had some bridges that were just terribly brushed over. To see photos of them before, it looked like it was an impossibility. I mean, it looked like it was going to take a month of Mondays to be able to clean just one particular bridge. And what actually happened was that a scout troop emailed me on a Thursday, maybe it was a Wednesday, and they said, we would like to send the scouts out. We're camping in the Forest Service, and we would like to be able to come out. We have about a dozen scouts, and we would like to be able to come out. What is there that we can do? And so I showed them a series of pictures, and they said, we look at the pictures, and they picked the picture of the bridge that was the worst one.
Nice.
And what happens at that point, you have to understand the trail is closed, and the public just can't go out onto the trail. So I have developed an application on the website that allows us to accelerate getting this done, and in just a very short few minutes, they were able to submit and say they picked that bridge and they wanted to send the scouts out to go to that bridge. So you don't know what's going to happen, you know, when you have a group of youth that's going out. My objective is to make an enjoyable experience, make sure that they feel like they're accomplishing something. But what happened was, we had our safety meeting, went through the proper procedures, and, you know, was compliant with the force, which only takes a few minutes, because one of the parents said, you're only going to have them for about 30 seconds, so you've got to be quick. And so what I did was showed the scouts a photo of the bridge, and I said, you know, young men, maybe you don't know, but they burned the forest, and they burned the forest for a variety of reasons, but the forest is going to be burning to strengthen the trees, and it helps the timber, and it also provides habitat for the red-cockaded woodpecker, and those are two of the primary objectives. But burning the forest, although it's a major priority, also results in us possibly losing our bridges, and we could burn our bridges. And I said to these young men, I said, I need your help. Showed them the picture, looked them in the eye, and I said, are you up to the task? And they said they were. And so off we marched. Out to the bridge. What makes me most proud is that I look back at the time and I realized we were not even walking into the bridge until almost 9 o'clock, and 11:30 I had to leave them because I had five other work crews that were taking place that day, and I showed them what to do and I got them started, and then I had to leave them. And when I came back, it wasn't even noon. They were walking out in single file, and I was perplexed and I wasn't really certain. I wonder what condition the bridge is in. I thanked them for their service, and everything went well, and they appreciated it and gave them some water and very quiet, and they were on their way. And then I went down and looked at the bridge, and it is absolutely amazing. If you ever have a chance to go to the website and see the before and after pictures, those young men went 50 feet in every direction through some of the thickest yaupon and vines that you will ever see in East Texas. And there's people that have driven there and stopped, and they said they make it look like it's a small little park around the bridge. So if you're in the middle of the Sam Houston and you go to bridge number 24, just remember that bridge 24 was done by American Trails, and it was a group of just young adolescent boys that came out to the forest, just all of a sudden said, we want to help contribute. And within a couple of hours, we were able to put them out there. And it's amazing to see their work.
Those are going to be the young men that will have character and will have jobs as they get just a little bit older.
Absolutely. No, and it was really good. You know, it was really good for all of them. And actually, even after the fact, I showed some of the photos to the Forest Service, and the Forest Service, it was kind of comical. They said, well, what kind of motorized equipment do you use? And I said, there wasn't any motorized equipment that was used. And they said, well, obviously, if you cleared off that much, you must have had a mulcher. They thought that I had run a mulcher through the area.
Wow.
That had not taken place. I said, that was a group of boys that were trained in safety, and they used just hand tools. They simply used loppers. I showed them how to take the brush and get it away from the area. And they were like, it was just kind of funny. It's almost kind of funny to see. They looked like they were leaf cutter ants. They would chop and then carry it and chop and then carry it in little single file rows. So it was really neat to be able to behold and see what they were doing. And I just never expected for the accomplishment. So the only bad news is for the volunteers is if you're going to come out and clean off a bridge to help that, you got to at least be able to keep up with some 12 and 13-year-old scouts. You got to be able to at least do as good as what they do.
That may be a hard bill to fill. A lot of teenagers, a lot of children, and most adults now too, our lives are so full of media. They're so full of tasks and projects and things that are just forever flying at you that it seems like you never finish anything. Whether you're a housewife and the laundry's never done, whether there's a work project that just keeps circulating, it's really a rare person that has a job these days where there is a finished, accomplished end project. So volunteering with something like the National Forest will give you a huge sense of accomplishment. It will give your children a huge sense of accomplishment. This is indeed a great opportunity to teach your entire family a life lesson.
Absolutely. You know, being able to complete projects and being disciplined, back to the life skills that we've talked about. In addition, I had a family that has an Eagle Scout that asked about being able to come out and take on a project for an Eagle Scout project. What that requires, and it's interesting to hear children talk about this, but they need to do a feasibility study and they need to write up what the work plan is going to be, and it has to be approved by the coalition and by the Forest Service. And it's just kind of startling to hear the amount of planning and what's going into it. But going back to completing the job, one of the things the forest has said to me is that everything revolves around planning, setting a goal, identifying what it is that you're going to need to accomplish the goal, and then seeing to it that it comes to fruition. Leadership is what's evolving out of the coalition, and what I have noticed recently, and this would apply to the scouts and to the youth out there that is looking for something to invest themselves in, is that if you work with the coalition, you'll have the opportunity to be able to hone your skills of working with people. You'll be able to hone your skills of being a leader, and all of those life skills are going to apply in a real world with employment, because it's always going to be a collaborative experience working with other people. And that's really what the coalition is all about, is it is a collaborative, and you have to be able to work with your fellow volunteers.
Even though the trails are mostly open now at the Sam Houston National Forest, make sure you still consider being a volunteer. More volunteers are needed to sustain our trail system.
That's right. This is an ongoing thing. We are now the custodians of the National Forest Trail System, so the Trails Coalition will need your help on an ongoing basis. To volunteer, go to samhoustontrails.org.
And certainly be sure to go outside today. Going to the Sam Houston National Forest would be a great place to go. Happy riding, everybody.
Happy racing, happy jeeping, happy four-wheeling, whatever you're doing. Time to get them in motion and get them going. We'll see you next week.
Outdoors with Wheels has Lynn and Donnie bring you another informative and entertaining show. Thank you for listening. Now, head into the great outdoors. Get those tires dirty and get your mind right.
To Attention all outdoor adventurers, the wilderness is calling, Wilderness Rider Ranch that is.
In the rolling mountains of northern Arkansas, the sun lights fire in the sky every morning as the forest wakes up for an adventurous day at the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park.
Just a day's drive from all the hustle, bustle, and madness of the big city, the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch directly adjoins the Buffalo National River Park in the beautiful Boxley Valley Headwaters region, and it is bookended on the west side by the Sweden Creek Nature Preserve. It is some fantastic, one-of-a-kind natural property.
From hiking and mountain biking, climbing, or even off-road exploration on your dirt bike, your dual sport, ATV, side-by-side, or Jeep. Whether you camp by pristine waterfalls and unique natural wonders or enjoy more civilized lodging, your experience while exploring the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park will create memories which last a lifetime. Start your magical vacation at wildernessrider.com.